Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is 3K12 Education Talk Radio. Thank you so much for being with us today. As you know, we're now part of the American Consortium for Equity in Education over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org, which is where we archive all our shows now. Our magazine is over there, which is absolutely excellent. I got to tell you, it's called Equity and Access. It's an online journal. Everything we do over there is free for educators, so we want you to join in the never-ending quest for equity in public education, pre-K-12. Join with us. Again, it's free. We want educator voice all involved in this. It's an industry-supported consortium, so please, okay, we invite you over there to ace-ed.org, see our magazine, go through all our podcasts, all the information that's over there, and enjoy yourself while you're there, and think of us and tell your colleagues about us. We got a nice show today. We're going to talk about how kids are performing these days, and we're going to look at tracking the impact of COVID-19 on reading and math. And there's a difference between the two. And to help us get through that is the Vice President from Renaissance Learning. Okay, the one and only a returning guest. Welcome back, Dr. Katie McLarty. Okay, she's VP of Research and Design over at Renaissance. And she is the co-editor of a book. Morning, Katie, by the way. It's Larry here. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure to have you here again. Okay, your book is Preparing Students for College and Careers, Theory, Measurement, and Educational Practice. So I got a famous author here. Okay, he's got a PhD from the University of Texas, which is actually interesting, Katie, because you got your MBA, interesting, from University of Minnesota, right?
That's right.
And then you realize it's too cold to stay up there, so you decided to move back to Texas, which is where you are now. Is that
That's
correct?
Right.
Yeah,
one
there
end,
you go.
From
Smart
one
move.
End of I-35 to the other.
Wow, I never thought of that, but you're absolutely right. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yep.
Right? That's cool. That's funny. Okay, so warm weather, Austin. I hope it's a nice day down there today. You're in January, is it?
It's we got 3 inches of snow yesterday, Larry. It's the most snow that Austin's had in probably more than a decade. So it was
like a blizzard.
It was quite a joy for for the students. Most of the schools have canceled. We're having a real snow day today.
That's a riot.
Posting pictures of snowmen, like that's not something that gets to happen in Texas very often. So Texans are very excited about.
I hate to take time away from you making a snow angel today, Katie. That's terrible that I'm doing this for you.
Yeah.
Okay, to you, it's unbelievable. Wow, I didn't know it snowed in Austin yesterday. They must be going nuts. Okay, I mean, they can't. I live in Maine. You were in Minnesota, for God's sakes. I mean, you know, 3 inches of snow you don't even think about. Okay, and a major blizzard hits Austin. Wow, thanks for telling me.
Yeah.
Okay, I make fun of that the whole time. That's a riot. So you're at Renaissance now. You're VP of Research and Design. Nice title. I love that title. Talk about that. What's your job entail over there? Before we get into all the details.
Yeah. Yes. So Renaissance Learning has a combination of both assessment products but also instruction and practice products. And so my team oversees the content design and development across those different types of products, as well as psychometrics or the data analysis and the research and efficacy behind our work. So, you know, the design of the products and the research to show that they work and are valid.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's rather important, shall we say that? How's that sound? Is that rather important?
It's rather important. It's a great job. It's a great company.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was just doing a show earlier, and your job is interesting because it kind of segues from the show I did earlier today. We were talking about how people, when they say, oh, why don't you go into education? I had this personally with a niece of mine. I said, why don't you go into education? She's very bright, and she's at UMass. And she said, I don't want to be a teacher. And I said to her, well, you know, not every job in education has to do with being a classroom teacher. There's a whole industry behind it and a thousand things like what you do, okay, in terms of measuring assessment and all that.
UMass has a great psychometric program, if that's where she is. There are several great faculty members there at UMass.
You know, you're the second person in 2 shows to say that exact same thing. So there you go. I didn't know that. It's by coincidence she goes to UMass. But before I had somebody say the same thing when I brought that up. So it must be true. Okay, there you go. Wow, Interesting. Okay. So there's a lot of jobs in education, I guess, is my point. Okay. Katie, yeah. You're an expert on this. Kids, again, you guys, like everybody in the industry, all of a sudden we got hit with the, like everybody in the world, but everybody in our industry in particular, we got hit with the pandemic, okay? And we lost time. We tried to catch up. We're trying to assess how do we teach, all that sort of stuff. So all those things taken in, what are you finding? How are kids performing these days? And I found it interesting that you wanted to do the impact on both reading and math, the two exact opposites of education, reading and math. Okay, and I thought that was interesting. Yeah, nobody puts the two together. Yeah, but I think you need both.
Yes.
So go ahead. Yeah.
Yes,
What are you finding?
Yes.
Yeah.
So what we did is, Renaissance Learning offers an assessment, our STAR assessment, which is taken by students in all 50 states and D.C. And so when kids, came back to school in air quotes this fall, because a lot of kids didn't actually go back to school in buildings, right? They're at home learning virtually. But we had the opportunity to gather data from these students from schools that assessed. And we did see, a delay in from when schools would normally start assessing in early kind of August. A lot more pushed into September as schools got delayed and as we needed to work on how to bring students back. But, by mid-October, we pulled data and we had data from 5.3 million tests across reading and mathematics. And we're really able to go in and look at the data and say, compared to how students typically start a school year in the fall, where are they now? And we actually followed the same group of students over time. So our 5.3 million is students who they tested this fall and they also tested last fall. And so we could look at their progress and their change. And we did look at reading and math, and we found some pretty big differences between reading and math. So overall for reading, kids were maybe one percentile rank behind where they normally would start a fall. So they were a little bit behind, but not too bad. An average of maybe 3-4 weeks. But in mathematics, they were 7 percentile ranks behind, which is a much bigger difference, which translates to, an average of, maybe 8 to 11 weeks, 2 to 3 months behind where you would expect
Holy
in math,
bro.
Which is a a much bigger gap to try to make up.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense. I was thinking about as we were doing the show. I mean, you got the pandemic, so you're stuck in, so to speak. Okay, and you can read more, like reading, and you're always online reading that kind of stuff. All right, but math, you're not necessarily especially if you're a kid doing math. Okay, you'd be more in line to lose ground in math than you would in. It kind of makes sense, but so whose fault is all this? That's a good question. Let me change that question. Whose responsibility is this? Kids are really behind. What do we do? Wow.
Kids are behind. And I think think you hit the nail on the head in reading, right? We can do a lot with students just by getting them access to books and having them continue to read and read books of increasing complexity. And a lot of, local libraries, school districts have the ability to have virtual, online books for students, e-books, so that they can continue that. Math has been harder, and I think it's also the nature of the content. It's cumulative. So, it continues to build on each other. And so if you miss a piece, you're going to have a hard time catching up. And so I think there's a lot we can do in terms of trying to decide what are those critical building blocks, what are those elements. We call them focus skills at Renaissance, but they're the group of skills that you really need in order to advance to the next step. So you can think about, in kindergarten, it being really important to know, like in a reading world, it really important to know letters and their sounds.
Yeah.
The order of the alphabet, we all learn it, but we don't use it to the same degree, right? I mean, alphabetizing things is a skill, but not something that's going to be critical for learning to read later. So helping educators really think about what are those critical skills that are like essential to success in this grade, helping you be prepared for the next grade, or the ones that you might have missed last year when school buildings closed early. What are some of those building blocks from the prior grade that kids might be missing? And so how do we really focus our time this year on some of those key elements? I I have a fifth grade daughter, and she just keeps telling me how much they're doing fraction work, constantly doing fraction work. Mom, we're doing more fraction work. That's because fraction is probably your biggest skill in fifth grade that you're going to need to continue to move forward. And your teachers are working really hard to make sure that you grasp that skill, because it's a really challenging concept for fifth graders.
It really and truly is. How do we prepare? Look, this could continue, and it may very well happen again. COVID-19 isn't the last germ out there. Okay, there's plenty more germs. Coming our way. And as you look at this, and we understand this, that the kids are falling behind in math. Okay, which is key, because besides just math, math is logic. Okay, I mean, I was the world's worst math student. Okay, because nobody ever explained to me nobody ever explained it to me in context, so to speak. Okay, hopefully that's changed, all right? But, you know, math is always a struggle for a lot of kids, all right? And how do we move forward, knowing what we know now with the pandemic, and knowing that we can't let this happen again, and knowing that we got to catch these kids up, okay? Or they're just going to, like you said, it's cumulative. They're just going to keep falling further and further behind. What do we do?
I think there's a couple of things. I think, you know, there's a lot of education companies, excuse me, ours included, but a lot of them out there that are really focused on, you know, being able to have online, you know, ed tech instruction and practice for students. There's, as I said, there's a lot of reading and books apps that are very accessible to kids. I don't think there's as many in math. And, you know, so being able to make those math practice accessible for students, engaging for students, so that there are more options to choose from to help students practice, so that they're not just, you know, as you said, it's easy to curl up with a book because they're less likely to curl up with some fraction, you know,
math
cards.
Most people don't curl up with a – curl up is not a term you use when you're looking at your checkbook. Oh, it's a cold day outside. I think I'll make some hot chocolate and curl up with my checkbook. Nobody says that.
That's right.
That doesn't happen.
And I think I think one of the other things that people have talked about is, I think as parents, you know, you mentioned that reading was easier, or, you know, maybe a stronger suit for you than math. I think that's really common among parents. And so I think there's also maybe some education for parents of how we're teaching math these days, how kids are learning. I know the strategies that my kids have learned in math are different than some of the strategies I learned growing up. And so it makes it harder for me to help kind of teach and support and fill in those gaps. And so I wonder if there's also more we can be doing to help the parents understand how they can come alongside their students in cases like these. And, you know, we studied the pandemic in the fall, but it's still ongoing, right? I mean, I wouldn't have thought that in January, right, we still would have this many kids, virtual schools and states and districts that are moving back to virtual because the numbers continue to rise. And so we're going to continue to watch and analyze the data and see, you know, kind of the compounding effect over time of this disruption in our education. So I think that, you know, the ideas that we're talking about are not just good ideas for, you know, if there's another pandemic or another type of issue, but really for the ongoing situation that we're in, where, you know, more effort or more responsibility is being placed on parents, I think, than has been before, or other types of caregivers, or different kinds of situations as parents who are trying to work and school their kids are having to look to other options, whether that's, you know, pods or other caregivers or other types of things. There's a lot more support to be provided.
And, you know, how does this affect I'm asking Renaissance, of course, you work there. How does this affect Renaissance? And for example, this just comes to mind. You guys have seventh grade curriculum. Let's just say that. Okay, math curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
But now kids, I'm just using this as an example, okay, but now kids are getting behind and behind and behind. So your seventh grade curriculum is, if I may, is no longer applicable per se to where we thought the kids were going to be, okay? And as you look at it from the inside within the industry, i.e. at Renaissance as an example, okay, how do you get, what do you do to make up for the gap? What does the company do to make up for the gap?
Yeah.
And I'm not putting you on the spot. It's just because you work there. Yeah.
Yeah, no, let me talk a little bit about what we've done since the summer, because I think it's a great, you know, example case, right, of what people can do. So
yeah.
Starting in the summer, Renaissance identified and released what I said we call our focus skills. They're at renaissance.com/focus-skills, and you can read them for every single state we've identified. These are the most important, those building block skills that I referred to. And you can look ahead of grade, you can look behind a grade, you can see them tied to your state standards. Those are free and available on our website to anyone who wants to go look at them. And so we've had schools sort of look at those skills and kind of connect up their curriculum and figure out where to focus. We've gone a step further in our products. So like if you are a user of Freckle, which is one of our instructional practice products, and let's say you're a seventh grader, and you're on this our Freckle premium version, you can go in and say, hey, I want to practice those focus skills because that's really where I want to focus, right? Not all the math skills, but those ones that are critical to moving forward. And we have an adaptive algorithm, so you can do adaptive practice. So if you're a seventh grader and you really haven't mastered those prior skills, it can adapt you back so that you can work at those earlier grade levels, master those skills, and continue to move forward. So both the adaptivity component is really critical. It helps individualize the learning for that student. But then also because it's linked to the focus skills, we're giving priority to those skills that we think are most important for students as they're trying to catch up on everything and maintain a current pace is just unrealistic. And so we've really identified through our work, you know, decades of work in how students learn, what are those important skills, and then built them into our products.
Yeah, and, you know, that's one of the things, I have to say this, we have our, I think you heard me at the beginning, we have our Consortium for Equity, okay? It's over at ace-ed.org if you want to look at it. But one of the reasons we created it, and it just refers back to what you just said, is that the industry has a lot, obviously, has a lot to offer the educators. Okay, you guys are constantly working on this stuff. Okay, but unfortunately, most of the world of education sees the industry in a sales situation. Okay, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. Okay, and what you just said about all the work that goes into making what you do work, that's why we created this. Okay, it's just so important for people to realize how the industry reflects what's going on in the profession and vice versa, how the profession depends on the industry to come up with the real important stuff. That was a really good answer. I appreciate that, KD. I really do, which brings me to the next question. Okay, some kids are doing better than others these days. Okay, and there's a lot of, underrepresented groups, minority groups, urban versus rural. We can break it down any way we want to break it. Okay, and you can do it from two angles. What have you learned about how those groups are doing as you've broken them down, even male, female, okay, during the pandemic? Okay, and then again, you can talk about Renaissance and as they look at this, what they do about it.
Yeah, sure. So absolutely.
By the way, that answer requires that answer. If you answer that all correctly, in the next 5 minutes, you get another PhD. That's a huge question. I just want, just so you know that. Okay. So do the best you can.
Yeah, not an easy one. That's right. We are not loving easy questions this morning.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Yeah.
No, we absolutely did look at the data by the different student groups that we have. You know, whether those are by race and ethnicity, by school location, and looked at the impact. And so I'll say up front, not every school provides us with demographics or information about students. It's only what schools choose to give us that we can reflect in the research.
Right, of course.
But what we did see is that for students that were, you know, a Black, African-American, Hispanic, Latino, American Indian or Alaskan Native, those students actually were further behind than average. So as I said, for math, it was 7 percentile ranks overall. We're talking 8-9 percentile rank difference for those underrepresented minorities. So they are seeing it. And same thing for reading, you know, -1 overall, -2 for these minorities. So,
jeez,
you know, not numerically one difference, but that's still twice as big. So, I mean, there's definitely
exactly.
a
it's
disproportionate
geometric.
Impact.
Yeah.
Disproportionate impact for those students. And again, one of the things that we're going to look at when we do a report, as I said, we're going to continue to look at this data throughout the year, is, you know, also seeing if we're different. I've read a lot of news articles about different groups, like underrepresented minorities being less likely to go to school in person, right? Not sort of trusting the safety of in person or, you know, maybe students from, you know, higher economic challenging backgrounds, right? Parents are working, kids are maybe not able to log in and attend as
right.
much. And in fact, we don't have student economic disadvantage as an indicator, but we do look at Title I, school-wide Title I, which is a sort of school, you know, high-poverty schools. And high-poverty schools are same thing, significantly more impacted, further behind than average, as are schools that are located in rural or small-town areas. So, again, those are the places where we're seeing the highest impact of COVID-19. The kids that are falling most behind are in Title I, rural, small town, and are underrepresented minorities.
Wow. So what do we do? There's the next question.
Yeah.
What do we do? Yeah.
Yep. I think there are a lot of things as we try to think about equity and access. I think that's really important. We have
name of our magazine. That's the name of our online journal. That one, I didn't even prime you on that one. Okay, go over to a-ed.org and read Equity and Access Magazine. Thank you, Katie. But go ahead. Anyway.
I do 100% think that's critical, right? Because
beautiful. Thank you.
Have differential access to internet, differential access to a teacher, to books, to these different types of learning opportunities are going to have differential outcomes. So one of the things that we have, like within our products, we have the ability for schools to track the type of device that a student is on, or they can put in there the types of internet access, and they can disaggregate their data, which basically means break it up into different groups and look at it different ways to try to look at some of these equity issues. There's also a lot of, you know, organizations trying to support getting internet for students. We also will offer a lot of like freemium, like free versions of the product. So if you go to Freckle right now, you can log in, you can practice for free. You don't have to pay anything to get access to that. There is a premium level of the product, which will give you some additional features, but there's still access for any student. And so I think there's a lot of work that we've done with schools this year to try to, you know, to try to make sure that there's something available for all learners, because not only are students, you know, having economic impacts, but schools are having economic impacts of the pandemic as well. And so, you know, seeing what we can do to help support to make sure that there are things available for all students.
Yeah, and you know what you just said, you know, everybody's budget, because taxes are down, et cetera, not tax rates are down, but the amount of money collected is down as we are in an economic crisis, quite obviously, okay? And, you know, everybody, it's all downward right now, okay, including, I might add, where these kids are in terms of their achievement scores. And I tell you, we got to really do something about that. It's nice to hear. You know, we got to make what Renaissance is doing. We got to make sure these kids have access to it. There's a lot of frustration among teachers. I don't know if you're following that at all. All right, but how are you guys getting the word out to the educators of the things that you have available to help them through this?
Yeah, we've been doing
and
a lot of...
And working with educators. I mean, you guys do that all the time. That's why I'm asking.
We do. We've been doing a lot of webinars or presentations or just other kind of conversations with educators. In fact, we have, I mentioned our Focus Skills website. On there are downloadable workbooks. And those workbooks were created based on the feedback of educators. They said, hey, we want them in this order because that's how we teach it. Then please give us a place to write notes where we can put our things in here. And so we're building all of our products and these, you know, other free pieces that we're giving away with the input of educators, because if educators aren't going to use them, then it kind of defeats the purpose of us creating them, right? I always I was super excited to be at Renaissance because the magic happens in the classroom. That's where kids learn. And so that's, you know, our job is to partner with schools and really with the educators and make sure that they have what they need, that they are informed about these pieces of our product, they know how to use them, and that they know how to interpret the data and information that come out of them. So we've been doing a lot of those types of, you know, remote trainings in the times of the pandemic, but a lot of, you know, trying to have conversations both once the features are released, but also to inform what we're building to make sure that it's really hitting the mark of what teachers need most right now.
And as VP, by the way, that was good, thank you. And as VP of Research and Design, Okay, that's key. Okay, research is one thing. Then you take it and you actually make it work. Okay, and you use it to develop something. And this is kind of a silly but tough question. What's this one thing in the pandemic, this crazy year in education, that stands out to you as the worst thing or the thing we need to move forward, whatever the hell that thing might be? Answer
question.
It any way you want. You know, to me, let me
okay.
give you my answer. Okay, my answer
yep.
was that we got caught short. Okay, that we thought everything was okay, and then when this pandemic hit, when the poop hit the fan, so to speak, okay, we suddenly found ourselves caught really short. Okay, and suddenly we didn't have the capability to educate everybody the way we should. It became a big equity thing. That's what stood out to me. My God, look, we kicked the can down the road too long. Okay, and that's my thing. So, well, you know, and I don't want to put words at your mouth, please. But
thinking about it slightly differently. So let me answer and tell me if I'm hitting the mark here. But I was thinking, like, as a company in ed tech, right, as an education company service provider, one of the things that I saw is I think we need to do a better job of getting educators like the information they need right now.
Good answer.
We tend to give educators a lot of choices and a lot of options, a lot of things they could do, and they have a lot on their plate. And so being able to give them, here's our recommendation, and then you also have options, but being a little more, for me, directive in the recommendations, not saying teachers have to do it, but for teachers who are pressed for time, because I think in this pandemic time period, they are being asked to do so much more than they had before. And so that's a place where I think we could really support educators more than we have previously.
That was a great answer. Thank you. And that's
yeah.
a wonderful. No, I'm serious. That was a wonderful answer. Okay. And I guess the point of me asking the question is that we have to learn something from all this.
Absolutely.
Okay. And when I can, maybe I should have asked that way. What's the most important thing we've learned from all this? I mean, it's all negative, but what's going to come out of it is going to be positive. Okay,
yep.
And if we can help, just take yours, and we can help teachers cut down on the options and get right down to the nitty-gritty, we're in good shape. It's fun to have you back here, Miss Katie. Thank you, Dr. McClarty.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Great
and now you're
going
to go play in the snow? Your daughter, she's
That's
doing
right.
great. Yeah, so what she's doing, like fractional snowballs? Is that what she's doing today?
You know, I think it's funny. My kids are less excited about the snow because we lived in Minnesota.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Playing with the neighborhood kids who have not had the snow experience, yes, it is a snowball day, and they are super excited about it.
Here's what you do. You say, okay, make a snow fort, and you kids who are doing fractions, make a third of a snow fort. That's simple.
I love it.
There you go. Just an idea. What can I tell you? Katie, thanks a million. Stay warm down there, okay, in the freezing cold
Thank
of the snow.
Thank you. That's
yes,
right. You never have to say that. Stay warm down in Texas from those of us in Maine. Thank you.
And stay safe. Thanks, Katie. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Wonderful day.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Dr. Katie McClarty, everybody, from VP of Research and Design, key stuff, at Renaissance Learning. Thank you, Katie. It's wonderful. Okay, it's renaissance.com if you want to check out all the stuff that she does over there, renaissance.com. Okay, we'll archive over at ace-ed.org, and Katie gave the plug. Read the magazine. It's over there, Equity and Access. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, all part of what we do at the American Consortium for Equity and Education over at ace-ed.org. Thanks for listening. Thank you, Katie.